Welcome back to The Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Talking about chapter one of book one of The Red and the Black. The Red and the Black. I liked it. I think the prose was easy enough to follow. There's a lot of references that went over my head. And the one thing I don't like about the edition that I have is that there's footnotes, but they're just denoted with a little number, and then you have to go and look up the chapter that you're reading in the back of the book and find the numbers that relate to those footnotes. So you can't really read them on the same page. You've got to flip back and forth between the back of the book. I don't know how much I want to do that, you know? It's adding a good, I don't know, extra page or page and a half of reading to the chapter. So almost sort of 50% of the chapter again. So what I'm going to do, though, I am going to read the footnotes from yesterday's chapter, chapter one. And I'll do it and see if it's good, see if it's helpful. And we might continue doing it, or we might not. But I think at least in the name of setting up some context and trying to wrap our heads around who are these people, where are these places, etc. it might be good to read these footnotes for some extra context. So we'll do that now. So, where do I have to go to find these here? Hang on. Notes. They're really quite lengthy notes too. You'll notice this. Okay, so the first footnote is for the little quote at the start, Truth, Bitter Truth by Danton. And the footnote says, Danton, not an actual quote, but in the spirit of Danton, 1759 to 94, the mighty and often heroic proponent and orator of the French Revolution and the accelerating violence of which led to his own death by the guillotine. The next one is by the next quote by Hobbes, not of course an actual quote from Hobbes either, who did not write gnomic verse, though there are some autobiographical verses, but it can be said to have a flavour of his hard-headed political philosophy. I assume that thousands refers to money, unless possibly it is an indirect way of opening the novel's contrast between small town and city. That's to do with the quote, put thousands together, less bad, but the cage less gay. The third footnote is about the French Comte. To a French reader, this would have conveyed the sense of a region far from the centre. The Franche Comte is a spectacular area in the extreme east, next to Switzerland. Became part of the kingdom only in the 17th century. It is as North Wales is to an Englishman, though even more remote. There are remarks later in the novel about its people's uncertain grasp of French. 1815 made him mayor of Verrieres. Monsieur de Renal is an ultra-royalist, hostile to anything to do with the Revolution or Napoleon, who has benefited from the restoration of the Bourbons in that year, and who therefore wants to distance himself from the appearance of the modern capital, industry, commerce, etc. And, as the previous paragraph of the text suggests, mayors in France, because, no doubt, of the different historical evolution of the feudal structure on the continent, were much less irretrievably bourgeois, middle class, and unaristocratic than in English tradition. This is an important social nuance for this novel. I'm going to read that again, though, because I didn't understand what I just read. Suggests that mayors in France, and as the previous paragraph of the text suggests, mayors in France, because no doubt of the different historical evolution of the feudal structure on the continent, were much less irretrievably bourgeois, middle class, and unaristocratic. They were less unaristocratic. So they were more aristocratic than in English tradition. This is an important social nuance for this novel. Talleyrand, for example, who was at the heart of European politics for 40 years and whose family was one of the very oldest in France, late in life became mayor of Valenciennes for 6 years. And the last footnote, from Italy by those masons who cross the gorges of the Jura on their way to Paris every spring. It has been suggested that this is likely to be a covert allusion to the international spread of liberal ideas via Freemasonry. Okay. There you go. does that help? Sort of. I guess. Let's see if these comments from the discussion post might help a little bit more. What are your first impressions of the narrative style? What do you think of our setting, Verrieres? And Sorrel pulled a swift one on old Mr. Mayer. Swim said the Mama Fishy says, from the Raphael edition notes paraphrased, notice this book was about to be published when the great events of July turned our minds from mere fictions. There is reason to believe that the following pages were written in 1872. Mine says that as well. The great event of July refers to the Revolution of July 1830, which brought down the increasingly conservative government of Charles X, ending the Bourbon monarchy and the first period of what is known as the French Restoration. Duke d'Orléans then became King Louis-Philippe and began what is known as the July Monarchy. The reference to 1827 being the date of The Red and the Black is not true. There is no question that Stendhal began the novel in 1829 and completed it in 1830. Okay. Very good. Thank you. God, I'm going to have to brush up on my history for this one, I think. Swims in the Mum Fishy said, I found the narrative to be dryly humorous. The character sketch of the mayor and all his pretensions and how he got fleeced by Sorrel is hilarious. This town today is probably a tourist draw with quaint B&Bs, cute little shops, and trendy restaurants. This is also true of most of the old mining towns in the American West. Back in the day, with the sawmills, nail factory, and textile production, I bet it was an environmental horror show. Also true of the American West mining towns. My notes inform me that Stendhal was born and raised in Grenoble, France, small mountain town, which he apparently despised. This comes through loud and clear in the chapter's last two sentences. Sorrel, based on his business acumen, has been elevated from peasant status to now being addressed as Perry Sorrel, which is a step below Monsieur. Good for him. Edit, I had a eureka moment. I was flummoxed why the USA was referenced as idiotic in my translation, along with small French towns. It's because of their stance on the French Revolution. Yeah, I think... So, wait. Oh, I don't know. Cool. I know there was some link between the French Revolution and the American Revolution, and there was a kind of bit of a relationship there, or a dynamic, I should say, between the two countries, both experiencing their own independent revolutions. Genghis Cohn said, this is my first read-along with the sub, and I was so hooked by the first few pages that I am now well ahead. I loved the setup with the pier, Sorrel and Renal, and the descriptions of the town. Welcome aboard, Genghis Cohn. You've kind of already broken the number one rule. And hey, read as much as you want. There's no real rule. But we're going to be reading one chapter per day. So if you want to stay in step with us, and it works best for the discussion part of things, because it means you won't accidentally spoil anything, which is good for us. But also, it means you'll get the most out of each discussion because it'll be fresh. I hope you'll find that if you do one chapter at a time, it does seem slow to start with, but it allows us to really get into each chapter, and it means each chapter sits with you for a whole day, and really good things happen when you do it like that. You think about it, you anticipate what will happen next, and you kind of explore the chapter more in your mind. Anyway, welcome aboard. I hope you'll be here and drop some comments in. Guanaral says, yay, a new book. Guanaral is a name I haven't seen for a little while. I'm reading the Gutenberg version, which was translated by Horace Samuel. My first impression is that this translation is not good. The punctuation in particular is very erratic, and commas seem to be randomly placed. Sample passage, 20 heavy hammers which fall with a noise that makes the paved floor tremble, all lifted up by a wheel set in motion by the torrent. Each of these hammers manufactured every day I don't know how many thousands of nails. Yeah, that's a bit clunky. I would say it's quite a long book. Try to get your hands on a copy of a more modern one. Penguin translation or Penguin Classics maybe. And you'll just enjoy the book so much more. You won't have to search very hard to find one, and you shouldn't have to pay too much. You know, they're all classics, so you can find even the Penguin Classics there, you know, $10 or something. So yeah, keep reading the Gutenberg one for now while you keep your eye out for a Penguin one, and then maybe do a little switcheroo somewhere. Well, it doesn't have to be Penguin, but you know what I mean, a more modern one. Because it will make all the difference. It really will. It entirely makes or breaks a novel, which translation you read. Anyway, here we go. Various seems to be a typical small town, says Gunnaro. Outsiders find it beautiful and quaint and picturesque, but residents know all the ugly secrets about one another. I grew up in a place like this, and I can relate. I'm looking forward to reading more about it. And I already like Sorrel. Yeah, we've all... I mean, we're not all from a small town like that, but we've all got a small town like that in our lives. Maybe it's somewhere where family lives or something like that. But the small town thing, you know, it's... yeah, the rumour mill and all the rest. Altreat asked, did anybody else... I skipped a bit. I googled the epigraph, put thousands together, less bad, but the cage less gay. And in Google Books I found this explanation. The phrase says approximately this. Were society formed of better people, it wouldn't be very lively. That is, bad side of people. The bad side of people is what lends spice to social existence. Did anybody else get that from the epigraph? I took it to mean that when you put thousands of people together in a city, it's better, a better experience overall, but the cage, i.e. the environment of surroundings, are less beautiful. This is wildly different to the above interpretation, although I can see that the meaning there as well, it's been pointed out to me. Any other interpretations out there? Another book suggests that the words are completely meaningless except for what we project onto it, so there could definitely be others. Which one do you prefer? I actually prefer the quoted interpretation to my own in some ways. Certainly agree with the sentiment to a greater degree. Yeah, it kind of makes sense, the one that you found on Google thing. I like that. I like it. Techrific. Techrific. Hey, buddy. Welcome back, Techrific. Techrific had a little break from the subreddit, but he's a moderator of the sub and one of the founding Redditors of this sub. So it's good to see you back. Techrific says, starting book one with the apocryphal quote by Danton suggests that this will not be a romanticized portrait. Danton was a central figure, during the French Revolution, a political figure, some might say a soldier in the revolution. The soldier as an archetype is the red alluded to in the title of the book. Cleverly, Stendhal also puts emphasis on truth in this quote, truth, the bitter truth. It's repeated two times, suggesting two truths. The red truth of soldiers and politics and the black truth of clerics and religion. He hid the main themes in the first quote itself. I'm liking this already. The town Verrières is wordplay on vérité, truth, in French. His description of it is not positive, and although modern in the sense of it being industrialized and noisy, is populated by people that are more parochial than urban in their ways and attitudes. I like the dry humor of his prose, but I sense some anger and bitterness underneath it all. Very interesting that it's all about truth, the bitter truth, and that means two things, truth and the bitter truth. Those are two different things. the red and the black also being explained there. What was it? The red truth of soldiers and politics and the black truth of clerics and religion. Wow. All right. Oh, we're getting deep already. I love it. Acoustic Eel says, various seems like another classic small town in France. Maybe it will have an atmosphere like Yonville. Completely different geography, though. I'm looking forward to some mountain scenery. Yeah, me too. I liked when I found out that it was on the Alps there. Kind of near Switzerland and Italy, kind of all bordered there. That made me happy. A couple of highlights from skimming Stendhal's bio in my edition. He joined Napoleon's army and served as an aide-de-camp in Bonaparte's campaigns in Germany, Austria, and Russia. I wonder if he was ever part of a scene which was later depicted by Tolstoy in War and Peace. Yeah, most likely if he was an aide-de-camp in Russia. Stendhal was the most famous of the more than 200 pseudonyms he employed in his lifetime. Imagine having 200 alt accounts, 200 pseudonyms. How many things did he write? Bloody hell. In 1835, Stendhal was awarded the Legion of Honor for services to literature, just like Holmes. Haha. He once predicted, "I will be famous around 1880, 40 years after his death," and it does say that there was widespread attraction at that time. I thought I left a lot of time for shipping, but my copy of the book just came in the mail today. Perfect timing, anyhow. Yeah, well, the shipping's a bit slow at the moment, hey? I went to post a review copy of a book to a fellow Redditor in South Africa. And found out that I am not allowed to send it to South Africa. There's no mail back and forth between Australia and South Africa at the moment. So, yeah, it's not exactly easy to get a book over the pond at the moment. I mean, I expected it to be slow, but I didn't expect it to be not possible. But hey, they'll open up those routes again eventually and things will go back to normal. Okay, what else can we say? Charlotte said, "I found this chapter pretty boring and kept zoning out. I hope it gets better from here." Wow, I mean, it was a pretty short chapter. It only had 3 pages. So you did a good job to zone out multiple times in that. But I get you. I mean, it was very much a exposition chapter. And I think there might have been some stuff hidden in there about the themes. You know, I think there might have been a few hidden motifs that will echo throughout the book. And I liked the characters that were introduced. I don't think it moved too slowly, but I do get your point. It wasn't exactly like a thrilling introduction to a novel. I'm with you. I do hope it gets better from here, although I don't think it was bad, but I hope it gets a bit more exciting, is what I should say. I think it will, because my understanding is it's mostly a romance story. And I don't know. I mean, I am sick to death of romance stories, but they are somewhat engaging, if they're done well. Nematode86. New name? I'm not sure if I've read a comment by you before, Nematode86. Maybe I have. I read along with The American and Madame Bovary, really looking forward to this one. I dig the narrative style, it's not too ornate, and they have dry humour, which is entertaining. I'd agree. I think the narrative style so far is good. Readable. I'm somewhat familiar with the tyranny of opinion, as user Altreat put it. I love takedowns like this. This is referring to my question. What do you think of our setting, Verriers? I love takedowns like this. Man, that last sentence was incredible. But I'm also very wary of anything that flatters my own beliefs, so it's hard not to be skeptical about what Stendhal says about this town. I'm also sensing a lot of hostility the French have towards their provincial areas. Between this and Madame Bovary, I get the sense that urban French folk really look down on their provincial compatriots. It kind of reminds me of our political divide in the US. I'm wondering what a novel would look like if it didn't have all this rancor directed towards non-Parisians. Really happy that Sorel pulled a fast one on the mayor. What a douche. Non-creative handle says, yay, finally got to join along with everyone. First impressions, I'm currently reading Don Quixote on my own, and the first chapter has a similar humour to this writing. Kind of dry and self-aware kind of humour. The description of the town gives me flashbacks to my trip to Solvang, California, I think that is. I guarantee you anyone who lives there now, especially since there was a book written that pays homage to it, probably hates it. I just wrapped up Anna Karenina, so it's refreshing to see more investment in painting a picture of the setting while not going overboard. Ahem, John Steinbeck and Stephen King. Even the cutest and quaintest of towns has one of these characters. I hope Sorel becomes a fixture in the story. I enjoy a rogue character who adds a nice dose of shenanigans and tomfoolery. Hey, non-creative handle, I do thank you for letting me have an excuse to say... Oh, what am I doing? The Danish capital of America. Oh, okay, it's like really Danish looking. Shenanigans. Thank you for giving me an excuse to say shenanigans and tomfoolery. You don't get often to say those words, and what a fun bunch of words it is. And also, were you accusing Stephen King of painting too thorough a picture of his settings? Because I haven't read enough King to dispute that. I've only read one Stephen King book. I've read It, and I loved it. It's one of my favourite books. It's strange that I haven't read more Stephen King. The only other book I've read by him is his book On Writing. And in On Writing, he specifically talks about not painting too thorough a picture in setting up a scene. So it's interesting that you should accuse him of doing just that. All right. Let's continue. We're going to read chapter 2, which is called A Mayor. Prestige. Is that nothing, sir? The respect of fools, the astonishment of children, the envy of the rich, the scorn of the wise. That's a Barnave quote. Fortunately for Monsieur de Renal's reputation as an administrator, an immense containing wall was needed for the public walk that stretches the length of the hill 100 feet above the Doubs. From this fine position there is one of the most picturesque views in France, but every spring torrents of rain used to wash over the walk, hollowing out fissures that rendered it virtually impassable. This inconvenience felt by everybody presented Monsieur de Renal with the happy need to immortalize his administration by means of a wall 20 feet high and 70 or 80 yards long. The parapet of this wall, about which Monsieur de Renal had been obliged to make 3 journeys to Paris because the Minister of the Interior before last had declared himself the sworn enemy of the public walk of Verrières, now rose 4 feet from the ground, and as if to defy all ministers past and present, is now being dressed with slabs of stone. How often, musing on the parties I had left in Paris the day before, and leaning my chest against these great blocks of fine bluish-grey stone, my gaze has plunged into the Vale of the Doubs. Further on the left bank, there wind 5 or 6 valleys in whose depths the eye can clearly pick out little rivulets. One of them, one can see, having cascaded from waterfall to waterfall, fall into the Doubs. The sun is very hot in those mountains, when it shines, and its height from travellers' reveries are shaded by the magnificent plane trees on the terrace. These owe their swift growth and magnificent blue-green foliage to the imported soil that Mayer had put in behind this huge containing wall. When, in the face of opposition from the municipal council, he had the walk enlarged by more than 6 feet, although he is an ultra, and I am a liberal, I honour him for it, which is why, in his opinion, and that of Monsieur Valenod, who has the good fortune to be director of the poorhouse at Verrières, This terrace can challenge comparison with that of Saint-Germain-en-Laye. For my own part, I find only one thing to complain of in Loyalty Promenade. One reads this official name in 15 or 20 places inscribed on marble plaques which have earned Monsieur de Renal another decoration. I deplore the barbarous manner in which the authorities clip and pollard these vigorous plains back to the quick. They really ask no better than to be allowed to assume the magnificent shapes one sees in England, instead of being made to resemble the most common kitchen garden plants with their lowered, rounded, and flattened heads. But a mayor's will is absolute, and twice a year the trees belonging to the town are mercilessly amputated. The local liberals pretend, though they exaggerate, that the hand of the official gardener has become more severe ever since the Cure Maslon developed the habit of claiming the profits from the cutting. This young ecclesiastic had been sent from Bascon a few years before to keep an eye on the Abbe Chelan and a few other local parish priests. An old surgeon major of the army of Italy, who had retired in Verrieres, and whose way of life was, according to the mayor, Jacobin and Bonapartist, dared to complain one day of the periodical mutilation of these beautiful trees. "I like shade," replied Monsieur de Nal, which, with a touch of that hauteur appropriate to speaking to a surgeon who was a member of the Legion of Honour, "I like shade, I have caused my trees to be pruned to give shade, and I cannot imagine that a tree is made for anything else, when unlike the useful walnut, it doesn't bring in any money." Here is the mighty phrase that determines everything at Verrieres: bring in the money. All by itself it represents the habitual thinking of more than three-quarters of the inhabitants. To bring in money is the motive that rules everything in this little town you thought so pretty. The visiting stranger, charmed by the beauty of the fresh deep valleys that surround it, imagines at first that the townsfolk are receptive to the beautiful. They speak of nothing so frequently as the beauty of their countryside. One can't deny that they have set a high value on it. But this is because it attracts a number of visitors whose money enriches the innkeepers and so, through the mechanism of local taxes, brings in money to the town. One fine autumn morning, Monsieur de Renal was strolling down Loyalty Promenade with his wife on his arm. While listening to her husband, who was speaking with a grave air, Madame de Renal's eyes anxiously followed the movements of three little boys. The eldest, who might have been 11, often went too near the parapet and looked as though he might be about to climb it. A soft voice would then pronounce the name Adolphe, and the child would abandon his ambitious intent. Madame de Renal looked to be a woman of about 30, but still rather pretty. "He may seriously regret it, this fine gentleman from Paris," said Monsieur de Renal, with an offended air. "His cheeks paler than usual. I'm not without some few friends at the chateau. However, though I fully intend to talk to you about the provinces for a couple of hundred pages, I haven't the heart to subject you to the tedium and astute manoeuvring of a provincial conversation." The fine gentleman from Paris, so odious to the mayor of Verrieres, was none other than Monsieur Appert, who, 2 days previously, had found a way to introduce himself not only into the prison and the poorhouse of Verrieres, but also into the hospital, which was run on charitable lines by the mayor and the principal local landowners. "But," said Madame de Renal timidly, "what injury can this gentleman from Paris do you, since you manage the care of the poor with such scrupulous honesty?" "He has only come to apportion blame, and then he'll get articles put in the liberal press." "You never read them, my dear." "But these Jacobin pieces get talked about, and all this distracts us and hampers our good works. As for me, I'll never forget that priest. I'll never forgive that priest." Sorry, I read that incorrectly. Oh, and that's the end of the chapter. There you go, another chapter down. Chapter 2. Something, something, priest. Have your say about that chapter over at the Hemingway List subreddit. Thanks very much for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.